I'm going to go line by line, verse by verse, Lord willing, through the rest of the book. Now, I'll do this in Sunday school, and I have covered chapters 1 through 6 the last time we went through Revelation. I got up to chapter 6, and I stopped at that point, or I might have stopped a little bit before that. So I thought that since I was going to start again, it would be appropriate for me to start in the 6th chapter of Revelation. Now, Revelation is one of the most, if it is the most controversial book in the Bible. And a lot of different people have a lot of different ideas. So when I go through some of this and you pick up your commentaries at home and you read them, you're going to say, that's not what Brother McElmurray said. Well, Brother McElmurray might be wrong, and that commentary might be wrong. But if you pick up 20 different commentaries on Revelation, you're going to find at least 10 different opinions on every scripture in there. So I'm going to show you what I believe and why, and it may differ with what you've been taught previously. It may differ with what you read in commentaries later on, but I'm going to show you why I believe it. Now, there's one thing in scripture that's absolutely essential that we understand. You need to make up your own mind based on the evidence. And if you're interested enough and you'll study it, you'll either come to a conclusion of, here's what I think, here's what I suspect, or here's what I know, or you may even come to the conclusion, I just don't understand this at all. There are a few sections in Revelation, I just throw up my hands and say, well, this is a best guess. We're going to begin in the 6th chapter of Revelation, and we're going to be talking about the four riders of the apocalypse. There are four riders that are mentioned coming in the first four seals in the Bible. Now, not too long ago, well, I say too long ago, it was, I guess, about 15 years ago, I received an invitation from a church out west, and they called a pastor after I received the invitation, and he was horrified because he said, Brother McElmurray believes we're in the tribulation period, and he was all upset about it. And the reason he believed that I thought we were already in the tribulation period is because I do not put these first four seals in the tribulation period. I don't put them in the tribulation period. You say, well, that's crazy. No, it all depends on how you look at it. And because I don't put them in the tribulation period, and because he believes they're in the tribulation period, then he automatically assumed I believe we were already in the tribulation period. I think that these seals, some of them have already been opened, some of them are opening now. So beginning in Revelation 6, 1 and 2, and I saw when the Lamb, of course the Lord Jesus Christ, opened one of the seals, and I heard, and it were the noise of thunder, as it were the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now, altogether, there are seven seals. We're going to look at the first four today, and we'll just continue where we left off Sunday morning after Sunday morning. Now, these are the first four seals of seven, and we'll eventually cover all seven, Lord willing. They are followed by seven trumpets, which are followed by seven vials of wrath. They are interconnected, and we're going to be discussing the way that they're interconnected. You don't have a situation where this happens, then first you have all the seals, then you have all the trumpets, then you have all the vials. You'll see later on that after the fourth seal, there starts to be a definite interconnection between all of them, and they are not separate entities that occur, the seals first, the trumpets second, and the vials third. It's something that we'll get to a little later on. Well, here we have a rider on a white horse, and he has a bow. And all the riders make a point of the fact that he has a bow, but no arrows. And that he has a crown, he rises to power, is given authority, and he goes forth conquering and to conquer. So most expositors say that this is the Antichrist. And they make a great point about the fact that he has a bow with no arrows, and that he conquers by using peaceful techniques, negotiations, and things of that nature.
There's a problem with that. Could it be true? Could this be the Antichrist? Well, if you want to go with the majority, I'll guarantee you that the majority of preachers swear up and down it's the Antichrist. And if you want to go with the majority, then go with that, because that's what virtually everybody teaches. Now, Conrad Glover, who was someone I loved very dearly, Dr. Conrad Glover, who was one of the founders of the Missionary Baptist Seminary in Little Rock, was absolutely convinced that this was Jesus returning. He didn't believe it was the Antichrist. He believed it was Jesus. And when I went to visit Brother Glover, and I did every time I went to Sheridan, I loved him very much. He was a fine man. And so he asked me one time, he said, "Brother McElberry, why do you believe that I wrote my commentary on the book of Revelation?" I said, "Brother Glover, because you wanted to get that part in there about Jesus being the rider on the white horse." I'll never forget what happened. He said, "That's right, Brother McElberry." And that is basically why he wrote the book. You got a problem if you try to make this the Antichrist or if you try to make it Jesus. Now, this is an area in my interpretation of Revelation that I'll admit to you publicly. I'm weak here. And this is an area that I don't have definite, absolute, positive conclusions on. But when you go through Revelation and you're going to teach it, you need to take a position and show what you believe and tell the people, "I'm not nearly as certain about what I'm going to show you here as I will be later on when we get into the trumpets. But as of right now, this is what I believe about the seals." I don't believe that's a man. I don't believe it's a man. And the reason I don't believe it's a man, I don't believe it's Jesus Christ, and I don't believe it's the Antichrist. The Bible is an absolutely consistent book in every way. The Bible, at times, will take four different things, and they'll be completely different. A dog, a cat, a chicken, and a frog. A dog, a cat, a chicken, and a frog. Well, they're all different. And that's fine. As long as all four things are different, that's fine, because that's consistent. If they're all four different, one from another, that's consistent. Or if they're all the same, four chickens, that's consistent. But you don't mix abstract terms with literal things. You don't mix the abstract with a concrete entity. And the next three figures represent war and famine and death. Now, war and famine and death are abstract terms. War is an abstract term, famine is an abstract term, and death is an abstract term. So if you're going to have three abstract terms, you can't let the first one be a man, because they've either all got to be different or they've all got to be consistent that they're the same. So I don't think it represents a man. I believe that these four riders represent mankind in four different phases of God dealing with them. So let me put that to you in plain written terminology so we'll all get in the same ballpark. When you talk about the rider on the white horse, most make this rider the Antichrist. Brother Conrad Glover believed it was the return of Jesus Christ. But to be consistent in interpretation, the three riders which follow must also represent men, and they don't. However, they are taught by most to mean war, red horse, famine, black horse, and death by pestilence, the pale horse. So you have a man followed by three abstract term riders. That's not consistent. They've either all got to be different or they've all got to be the same. I believe that the first rider is also abstract. I don't believe it represents the Antichrist or Christ. I believe it's also abstract in that he represents a time of peace before war. So you have peace, war, famine, and pestilence. All four are abstract terms. I believe that the first rider is also abstract in that he represents a time of peace before war, then famine, then pestilent death. I believe they represent four different dealings of God with mankind during the beginning of sorrows, which precedes the tribulation period. Now, I'm going to come back to that in about two shakes of a sheep's tail, but let's take a look at this beginning of sorrows. You all have seen me teach and preach on this until it comes out your ears. In Matthew 24:7-8, "For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these, the pestilence, earthquakes, and famines, are the beginning of sorrows. The God-breathed word for sorrow, I don't care what lexicon you look in, it will tell you that it is referring to the travail or pain of childbirth, a woman's birth pangs, a woman's both birth pains. Spyros Odiates, the best-known modern-day scholar, says the word Odin for sorrows, which earthquakes, pestilence, and famines represent, is referring to the travail or pain of childbirth. Bullinger says that Odin refers to a pain, especially of a woman in travail. Just as when a woman experiences her first genuine birth pang, everyone knows that more will follow, more and more with the passage of time, ever increasing numerically per unit time. So in essence, when Jesus used that word to these men, Jesus is saying there will be more and more earthquakes ever increasing numerically per unit time. There will be more and more pestilences ever increasing numerically per unit time. There will be more and more famines ever increasing per unit time. I think that the beginning of sorrows, shown here, is actually a period of time that precedes the tribulation period. If you take a look at this, and this isn't something that I came up with, it's, you know, overnight. This is something that I've been teaching ever since 1978. But again, I've tried to be honest with you. I'm not absolutely positive of it. The first through the fourth seal. Event number one is the white horse rider. Event number two is the red horse rider. Event number three is the black horse rider. And event number four is the pale horse rider. I believe all of these are the pre-tribulation beginnings of sorrows. I believe we are in the beginning of sorrows. I do not believe the beginning of sorrows is in the tribulation period. I believe that they occur before the tribulation period and continue to intensify and get worse during the tribulation period, as you can see on this chart that I'm showing you, on the first through the fourth seal. And then on the fifth seal, that's when the rapid rise of Antichrist toward full control occurs. And I believe that the first seal has already been opened. I believe the second seal has already been opened. I believe the third seal, the black horse rider, is opening at the present time. And I believe the pale horse rider will open soon. We are not too far away from the tribulation period. I can't tell you when it begins. I don't know that. But I can tell you that it's in the very near future. So you can see where I believe these seals occur. The first four seals, I showed you those charts and diagrams. I believe they represent four different dealings of God with mankind during the beginning of sorrows, which precedes the tribulation period. The riders of the four horses are not specific individuals. They do not represent men, but rather mankind. They picture four phases through which all mankind must pass before God pours out his wrath upon an unbelieving world during the last half of the tribulation period. The colors portray the characteristics of the four phases, which at times overlap, but are basically chronological in order. White for peaceful conquest, red for the bloodshed and conquest of war, black for the dark eyes of famine, and pale for the color of death by pestilence. The red horse rider is associated with a bloodletting sword. The black horse rider is associated with the black eyes of hungry people. And the pale horse rider is associated with a sticky color of death associated with pestilence. I've been in countries where they had famine. You've seen pictures on television. If you see them in color, and they're Caucasian, they're white in color, you'll see tremendous black circles underneath their eyes. The people in 95-96 A.D. in John's time, those people, black under the eyes was associated with famine, hence the color of the black horse. And the pale horse, you go to a hospital, you visit someone, and if you can't think of anything else to say, you say, well, your color looks good. If you go to a hospital and somebody's got a yellow jaundice appearance, and that pale color is a sickly yellow jaundice type appearance, and their color looks bad, you say, uh-oh, they got something bad wrong with them. They've got some kind of a bad disease, and they're headed toward death. So it's the sickly color of a person that's headed toward death, and that's the pale horse rider. The pale horse rider is associated with a sickly color of death associated with pestilence. So in all these things, when I talk about these first four seals, I'm talking about a period of time that we are in now. It hasn't been completed. It's a ways from being completed. But we're headed toward the completion of it. And eventually the Antichrist will sign a peace treaty with Israel. You'll have false peace on earth. And then that's followed at the same time by war in heaven. And we'll be going on into the fifth seal later. But I wanted to at least place where I believe these first four seals occur. Am I the only man on earth that believes that? That's very possible. If I had any sense, I'd just go along with the traditional teaching. If I had any sense, I'd go ahead and do what everybody else does and teach this was the Antichrist. Some people think I enjoy being a rebel and I enjoy being controversial. I don't. But I have to answer to Christ for what I believe. And I simply can't teach that the other way. I'd be perfectly willing to because it would be acceptable. And I'm not saying because I'm different, I'm right. Matter of fact, if you're different from most people, you're usually wrong. And I could just have waxed this all over and taught the standard thing and been accepted. But this is what I believe. And I'm not telling you shouldn't listen to the other side of it. You should. And you should have as many different teachings on this as you're willing to listen to. Because when it does begin to occur, and if I am correct, and all of a sudden we end up in the tribulation period, and this beginning of sorrows is something that has already occurred, then I think it would behoove you to understand what was happening at the time it occurred. Now, one thing is certain. This period of time, earthquake, pestilence, and famine, was definitely before the tribulation period. Am I correct in making it the same as the first four seals? Well, I believe that I am. Now, I'm absolutely positive that earthquakes, pestilence, and famines are the beginning of sorrows. And I'm absolutely positive that that does come before the tribulation period. But I'm not positive that the four seals are the same time as this. I believe it. It seems reasonable. And as you can see on this illustration, earthquakes, pestilence, and famine were to precede the rise of the Antichrist that you see by this horrible beast. Now we're going to begin a line-by-line, verse-by-verse exposition. Revelation 6, 1 and 2. And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw and behold a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow. And a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. I believe this seal opened at the end of World War I. I believe at the end of World War I, when the League of Nations was formed, and for the first time an attempt was made to bring worldwide peace, it succeeded quite well up until about 1939. Now, beginning in 1932, there were some different things that went on in Asia, across that area, that involved bloodshed. But for the most part, there was a time and era of peace and a constant fear that it would end. In 1932, Hitler began to flex his muscles. He didn't have any supposed arrows, but he had a bow. He began to build up an army. People were afraid of him around it. So the first thing he did was to march into the small section of land, Alsace-Lorraine, between France and Germany. He went in and took it over by peaceful conquest. No one was killed. There wasn't a war. Then he went south and went into Austria and took that back. Then he took part of Czechoslovakia back. And up to this point, every time he goes in, he takes it over by peaceful conquest. He doesn't have to shoot one single arrow. He just rattles his bow, shakes his bow. And when Hitler shakes his bow and threatens these countries, since they have Germans living in them, he has an easy access, goes in, no blood is shed, and he peacefully takes over the country. During the period of time from the end of World War I up until Hitler attacked Poland, we had a period of relative peace. Now, I know there was war in Manchuria, and I know that Mussolini attacked down in Ethiopia. I understand that. But for the most part, it was an era of peace. In 1939, when Hitler attacked Poland in September of 1939, all of a sudden the Red Horse Rider came on the scene. And the Red Horse Rider began to be involved in the greatest war we've had up to this time, and millions were killed in this war. So what I'm saying is this concerning the White Horse Rider. This rider represents the state of mankind that existed between the two great world wars. The color of the horse, like a white dove, symbolizes the state of peace that occurred between two German tyrants, the Kaiser and Adolf Hitler. A state of relative peace existed between the two wars from 1918 to 1932. However, a long series of conquests by shaking of the bow without shooting arrows allowed much conquest by the Axis powers during the mid-portions of the 30s. It was a time of peace where those who went forth conquering and to conquer did so by bluff, shaking the bow, rather than by blood. The first of the four beasts has come and gone. He departed the scene in 1939 when Germany invaded Poland. This war swept across the world and ravaged. It was a world war, World War I. And then World War I ended. There was a relative period of peace. And then the Great War, World War II, began. That war swept across the entire globe. Millions of men were killed. The weapons of war and the shedding of blood by sword, weapons of war, continued almost unchecked. As a result of it and the breakup of the nations that followed, we have had the next two riders gradually coming on the scene, which are famine and pestilence. But the first rider departed the scene in 1939 when Germany invaded Poland. Now let's move on to Revelation 6, 3 and 4. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse that was red. He follows the white horse rider. He came on the scene in 1939 when Hitler invaded Poland and began World War II. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given unto him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. It was the Great War. It was the war of wars, and as I've said repeatedly, much blood was shed, and back then a sword represented the weapons of war that took human lives. The bloody German invasion of Poland marked the arrival of the Red Horse of War. As its rider spread a blood-red sheet across Europe and Africa, soon all of mankind was engulfed in warfare. This rider took peace from the earth, and it will not be completely restored until the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. We have had no peace on this earth, since the invasion of Poland. Scattered wars such as Korea, Vietnam, and the Persian Gulf have been in effect continuously since the end of World War II. The rider of the Red Horse is still on the move in guerrilla warfare across the globe. The natural result of continuing conflict in varying degrees since 1939 is now opening the door for the arrival of the Black Horse. At the end of World War II, the nations began to rapidly increase in number. And as they increased in number and individual governments began to be set up, particularly in the underdeveloped countries of the world, tremendous corruption followed. Civil war raged in these countries. And because of that, because of war, and because of it consuming the time of the people, not producing crops, famines began to develop rapidly. Pestilence began to develop as AIDS and other new types of viruses suddenly were introduced into the underdeveloped countries of the world and have since spread into the developed countries. Brothers and sisters in Christ, the natural end consequence of World War II was followed by the rider on the black horse, famine, and it was followed by the rider on the pale horse, death. Now, the seals are not completely open on the famine, nor are they completely open on the pestilence. But it is completely open on the Red Horse Rider, and it has been decreasing. So I'm going to talk about the Black Horse Rider in a moment. But before I do that, let's take a look at what happened. This is from the Lentz Peace Research Lab, William Eckhart, Research Director. It shows the rise and decline of wars. You can see after the end of World War II, the number of wars climbed steadily. In 1980, we had 20 wars going on across this earth. They had steadily increased since the end of World War II. In World War II, we had one war. It involved Japan, Italy, Germany, versus the Allied powers. But after the end of that war, then many of the nations that had held colonial territories began to give them up. And those colonial territories began to increase and arise in nations, and nation rose upon nation and kingdom upon kingdom. As the Soviet Union fed its vast financial resources, gold reserves, into these nations, and as the United States fed its reserves into those nations began to fight as communism versus democracy. In the end, the Soviet Union collapsed, and when it collapsed and could no longer support its part in those nations, the number of nations that were involved in war began to decline. But war began with World War II when the Red Horse Rider came on the scene in September of 1939. War has still been here and is still going on, and it is still contributing to famine and pestilence. In 1980, there were 20 wars, and you will notice the steady increase. 21 in 1982, 23 and 83 and 84, 24 and 85 and 86, and in 1987, it reached a peak of 25. Never in the history of God's earth had we ever had more than 20 wars reported in any given year, beginning in 1980. Suddenly, with the demise of the Soviet Union, you can see that the number of wars began to decrease. Why? Because the Lord indicated this Red Horse Rider would come on the scene, war would increase, many lives would be taken. But he also indicated in 1 Thessalonians through Paul that there would come a time when men would cry, "Peace, peace," and then sudden destruction would come upon them. So the Red Horse Rider came on in 1939. The White Horse Rider has already come and gone. The peace between 1918 and 1932 is over. The Red Horse Rider came and many, many millions of people were killed. The Jews were brutally murdered by the millions, by the Nazis, by the elites SS in World War II. And this continuing death rate continued to occur up until 1987. In 1987, the number of wars began to decline. The Red Horse Rider has been on the decline ever since. But as he has gone on the decline, the number of famines because of all this war and because of all the disorganization following World War II has become rampant in the underdeveloped countries of the world, and the famine is increasing and the pestilence is increasing. So as the first rider left when Hitler invaded Poland in 1932 and the peace, the White Horse Rider, ended, the Red Horse Rider is gradually phasing out. He has come on the scene. Millions and millions have been killed because of it. And now you have the pestilence and the famine and the pestilence coming on the scene, as you see by this chart and graph. You see how the number of wars declined, 22 in 1988, 19 in 1989, 16 in 1990, 14 in 1991, 12 in 1992, 11 in 1993, 10 in 1994, and at the current time, we're down to about 6 wars going on. So the Red Horse Rider is phasing out, but the Black Horse Rider is becoming stronger and stronger with the passage of time. In Revelation 6, 5 and 6, continuing expositorily, line by line, verse by verse. In Revelation 6, 5 and 6, "And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see.' And I beheld, and lo, a black horse." The natural consequence of war is always a period of famine that follows, at least in the developing countries of the world, and that is usually followed by pestilence of some form or another. It occurs during the war and continues after the war, and in this case, because of an increasing population, has rapidly accelerated in recent times. "And I beheld a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of scales, a pair of balances in his hand." Here we have in Revelation 6, 5, and 6, "And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see.' And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand." He is balancing in this two-sided balance. On one side, he has what it costs to buy food, and on the other side, he has the amount of food that's available. Verse 6 defines the severity of the famine that's coming on the earth. It's here now. The seal is now open. It hasn't closed, and it's going to continue to get worse. "And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, 'A measure of wheat for a penny.'" A penny is a denarion. It represented, in the time that this was written in 95-96 AD, the standard wage rate. You worked one day, you got one denarion. You worked for somebody else in the field, you got one denarion. You work for somebody in a great vineyard, you got one denarion for a day's work. A measure of wheat for a penny. That's about a handful, a huge handful. Put your two hands together and cup them and fill it full of wheat, and that's about what that is. Now, wheat was what the rich people ate. And so this is about enough to make one small loaf of bread. So you work all day long, and it takes one day's wages just to get one loaf of bread. That equates to what it would be like today. And 3 measures of barley for a penny, denarion. The actual barley that is used there is the barley that was grown in Israel, of course. And the poor people ate barley. It was cheaper. So you would get 3 times more barley, 3 measures of barley for a penny, than you would wheat. So there would be a price range. The expensive stuff would really be out of sight. But the cheaper things like barley, which you could make about 3 small loaves of bread from, you'd get 3 small loaves of bread for your whole family for working one day. And see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. The oil was mostly olive oil, but there were some animal fats that were used. And they would take the oil and they would, after they had ground up the barley into fine powder, or the wheat into fine powder, as fine as you can grind it on stones, they would take that and make bread. And that was their staple diet. They drank wine, which was diluted at a ratio of 1 to 10. You couldn't get drunk by drinking it because after your stomach filled up, it had that ratio of 1 to 10, and that's not enough to make anybody inebriated. They would take the oil just like you take Crisco and make biscuits and bread with it. And so here it pictures, be very careful. Don't hurt the oil. Don't waste it or the wine. Don't damage it in any way. Hold on to it because this is going to be a time of extreme famine. This has come on the earth. First, we had a famine several years ago in Sudan. That was followed not long after that by one in Ethiopia. That was followed not long after that by one in Somalia. That was followed not long after that by developing one down in the countries of Rwanda, Zaire. And now in Korea, we have a famine. They are getting closer and closer together, just like a woman's birth pangs. So as the Red Horse Rider has been slowly phasing out after having killed millions and millions of people by his presence, and he's still on the scene in a small way. But we're headed toward a false peace treaty signed in Israel. So he's phasing down. But as he's phasing down, famine is increasing. And it's increasing because of a situation that is irreversible. The ravages of hot and cold war since the end of peace in the 30s has slowly but surely led man away from his humane pursuit of trying to feed all of mankind. We are approaching, fast approaching, a state of unbelievable famine. This rider is balancing the price of food in one balance against the amount of food in the other. The weighing of beverage, cooking oil, and grains against their price is clear evidence that this rider represents a shortage of food. Is there a shortage of food? Has the rider of the black horse arrived? 440 million Africans would certainly believe he has come on the scene. He's here, and the seal is already open. Now, these seals open, and they open slowly. And he's still on the scene, and it's going to get worse and worse. You may say to me with all your heart, Brother McElmurray, that's just your opinion. No, this is more than opinion. This is something that you say, well, you could misinterpret that scripture. That's true. I could misinterpret that scripture. But the evidence is overwhelming that this famine situation has to increase. This is something you've seen many times. It's a principle, and it's an undeniable principle. Jesus said in the last time, famines would increase like a woman's birth pangs. They will. And here's the actual evidence as to why it has to occur. Jesus said it, and that's why it will occur, but here's the reasoning behind it. By 1989, 11 million people were starving to death each year. It will be impossible to feed the fantastic addition of 5 billion more persons by 2030. If you had 11 million starving in 1989, how are you going to feed this additional 5 billion more? This principle involving multiplicity and multiplication of the human race is a principle that is undeniable. When Noah, his wife, Ham, Shem, and Japheth came down off the ark in the mountains of Ararat, mountains of Ararat, they came down and settled on the fertile plain between the Tigris and Euphrates River. At that time, the world's population consisted of 8 people. Christ was born in about 4 BC, and the population had only increased to 200 million. But it's like multiples. You start off with a single penny. On the first day, you have a penny, and the next day, you double it, and you have 2 pennies. The day after that, you double that, and you have 4 pennies. The day after that, you double that, and you have 8 pennies. The day after that, you double that, and you have 16 cents. Then you double that, and you have 32 cents. Then you double that, and have 64 cents. Then double that, and have $1.28. Then you double that, and have $2.56. Well, after all that, only 8 days has passed, and all you had to shell out was $2.56. That's not bad. But if you do that for another 32 days to make a total of 40, on the 40th day, you will have to pay the person, or you will have more than $5 billion. Not on that cumulative, adding it all up to that day, but on that single day, that would amount to $5 billion. That's the way the human race basically has functioned. You can see up until the time of Christ's birth, very slow increase, just like there was during the first 8 days of doubling that penny. When Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, there were 400 million people on the earth. The time of the Civil War, there were about 1 billion. I was born in 1932, there were 2 million people. You can see how it's rapidly accelerated. By 1975, there were 4 billion, 1989, 5 billion. In 1999, we'll have 6 billion people on the earth. And the prognosis for the year 2030 is 10 billion. We can't feed them. The land resources, we don't have it. The technology has developed to the point now where instead of helping the land, we're raping the land. And the truth of the matter is, it's going to be impossible to feed the worldwide population. And absolutely, positively, unequivocally, this famines must increase exactly as the Bible said, exactly as Jesus said they would. Now, after famine, he mentioned something that's very interesting. Revelation 6, 7, and 8. And when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beast of the field. To me, this is one of the most interesting verses in the entire discourse. There are things here that have, I am convinced, have been mistaught. And I'm convinced that many well-meaning expositors of the word have taken this verse and have misinterpreted it completely. And I'm going to be talking about that next Sunday. This is one of the things that I do feel very strongly about. Now, whether or not these actually are the beginning of sorrows, these particular events here, I cannot say for certain. I do believe that they are. But I know something about this verse for certain. And I know that the standard teaching on this verse is absolutely, totally, completely wrong. And so, Lord willing, next Sunday and during Sunday school, I'll be talking about Revelation 6, 7, and 8, the rider on the pale horse, the rider who is Death. And we'll be talking about the fourth part of the earth. And we'll be talking about what this verse exposits out to, that quite frankly, most teachers get it absolutely wrong. And so Revelation 6, 7, and 8, Lord willing, we'll begin here next Sunday as Jack Branch, local police officer, balding but friendly, hobbles his way up to the machine to see if those still buttons are still functioning, and he's about ready to push the button.